This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava. If I were to tell you right now that we're going to spend this hour on The State of Things talking about the Rules and Review Commission, or State RRC, your ears might glaze over. But what sounds like minutiae only a government wonk could love is currently at the center of a power struggle in North Carolina state government. The 10 members of the Rules and Review Commission are appointed by the state legislature to 2-year terms. Their job is to review the rules and regulations made by state commissions and determine if they are in keeping with the laws of North Carolina. Now, there is no stated criteria for membership in the RRC. Nothing specifies the makeup of the commission. The RRC okays most of the regulations that come before it, but some it does not, such as regulations the Environmental Management Commission drew up a few years ago for stormwater runoff. And that has led to court cases and constitutional challenges. Supporters say the RRC has kept down the number of regulations in the past decade, and they say that's a good thing. Critics say that the RRC's makeup is disproportionately tilted toward development interests, and so they have too much power to stop environmental regulation. And so we're discussing the RRC this hour. We welcome your calls. Our number's 1-877-962-9862. Does North Carolina need this gatekeeper for the often complicated rules and regulations that come out of state commissions? And if so, who is best suited to make that call? Which rules stay and which rules go? Joining us in the studio is Joe DeLuca. He is staff attorney of the Rules Review Commission. He's been in that job for 16 years. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you, Melinda. Good to be here.
And Jennifer Strom is with us. She is author of a profile on the RRC for the Independent Weekly newspaper that was critical of the RRC. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Joe DeLuca, start us out here. Why was the Rules Review Commission created in the 80s in the first place? Why was it seen to be needed?
Well, actually, although the Rules Review Commission, much as it's presently constituted, was first met in 1986, I believe, the idea behind it, the genesis behind it, goes back much further than that, back into the early 80s and even the 70s. You had at least a couple of state agencies or involvement with reviewing rules before they finally took effect. You had a legislative review commission, and I believe in the history that immediately preceded the Rules Review Commission, where the legislators themselves were reviewing the rules from the agencies. And then prior to that, there was the State Attorney General's Rules Review Committee, if you will, where they would take a look. And part of it was what was also going on around the country, that more and more recognition that rules, maybe even more than the laws behind them, than the statutes that the General Assembly or the legislatures pass, the rules themselves were what were critically affecting the population. Everything from restaurant inspection rules to boards of acupuncture to the state zoo, but these were where the rubber hit the road, and there needed to be a more unified process, a more uniform process for the rulemaking, and also perhaps some involvement with reviewing it, not from the point of view of whether these were good or bad rules, but did they meet some uniform criteria? And in North Carolina, we've ended up with that as, and I'll probably keep repeating this, that this is what the Rules Review Commission does, is it looks at, takes an overall view. Are the rules authorized by the state legislature? Are they clear and unambiguous? And have the agencies complied with the rulemaking process? Have they given the members of the public and those affected by the rules the opportunity to comment on the rules and to know what the rules are going to be?
Mm-hmm. Well, Jennifer Strom, you've written about this for the Independent Weekly. The group has existed, as Joe DeLuca says, in North Carolina since the 80s. So what objection is there to the RRC?
Well, I think that there's a lot of agreement that there needs to be some body to review rules for, as Joe said, consistency, statutory authority. The thing that I believe North Carolina is unique is that this Rules Review Commission, which is a body of citizens who are appointed half by the Speaker of the House and half by the Senate President pro tem, has veto authority, which the law was changed in 1995 to give the citizen board of 10 people the authority to outright reject rules based on these three criteria. And the effect of that has been that the Rules Review Commission has become a final stopping place for a handful of rules that you have a lot of competing interests involved in the rulemaking process. And whenever you have competing interests, it's very important to have the people making the decisions have some balance. And the criticism of the board, as you read in the story, there are a lot of these competing interests who feel as if the Rules Review Commission is not representative of particularly the public interest with regard to certain public advocacy issues, particularly the environment. Mm-hmm.
Well, you make the case, your article would state that there are more development interests there than those that perhaps wanted environmental interests sought after. So, Joe DeLuca, why isn't there a checklist of, you know, the Rules Review Commission should have, you know, this many people from this walk of life, this many from another? There are other commissions in the state, environmental management, that says, you know, you should have somebody who's an expert in this particular area of health, this person who maybe was in industry, maybe the very group that would be regulated by the EMC. There is a checklist for other commissions. Why wouldn't there be for this
one?
I'm
not sure that I'm really qualified to speak to that issue, but I can think of a couple of considerations that automatically or begin to come into play. The Rules Review Commission, the standards that it is supposed to use in looking at rules are very limited, and they have really essentially nothing to do with whether or not it's a good or bad rule. You know, the Rules Review Commission typically is supposed to and does defer to the expertise of the rulemaking agency. And there's language in the statute about we're not supposed to look at the quality or the efficacy of the rule. So the commission looks at the authority, the clarity, and whether or not they followed the rulemaking process. That does not require a particular expertise in a specific issue. If the legislature thinks that there needs to be a different makeup, it's certainly within their authority to do that. They're the same. It's the same legislature that has created the Environmental Management Commission, if you will, and dictated what kinds of persons are supposed to be on that, that created the Rules Review Commission and set the standards.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jennifer?
Well, I just wanted to point out that if you look at the ruling that came from Judge Stevens in Wake Superior Court on June 15th, which sided with the Environmental Management Commission in its challenge to the Rules Review Commission's rejection of the stormwater rules.
Judge, we should just explain that the EMC had been working for a number of years on stormwater runoff regulations.
Yes.
And then it went
and
to
had
the
revised
RRC.
The rules several times at the request of the Rules Review Commission. In the fall of 2003, and in January of 2004, the Rules Review Commission voted to reject the rules. And they, the Environmental Management Commission then filed a lawsuit in Wake County Superior Court, and arguments were heard in April, and Judge Stevens ruled on June 15th that the Rules Review Commission did overstep its authority beyond those three narrow criteria that it's supposed to consider rules on and had acted arbitrarily and capriciously in striking down the stormwater rules, which I know we're going to hear from Amy Pickle later. The Environmental Law Center and other environmental interests have made clear that they felt all along that the stormwater rules were shot down not based on their legal technical criteria, but because of the politics of growth.
Well, can we talk a little bit about the 10 members of the group right now who comprises the RRC? I mean, what is their background? Joe DeLuca.
From my point of view, it's a, you know, varied background there. And I have not, I didn't even bring a list of my commissioners. There are educators, or there's an educator on it. Three or four of the commissioners are not attorneys. The other ones are, but even the attorneys come from different backgrounds, from criminal defense to general practice to zoning representation. So, but again, I don't see that as anything that really has to do with what their job is at the commission, and the job is to review the rules for authority, clarity, the process. Judge Stevens did return those rules, and it's the only decision, I think, in the history of the Rules Review Commission. And a number of times, agencies have gone to court for different reasons over different sets of rules, or people have challenged rules that have been approved by the commission. And this is the first decision, I think, that we actually lost in terms of the decision that the commission made on a set of rules. Mm-hmm. And we'll consider them.
Right. Jennifer?
Well, I think that there's one of the things that I set out to explain in my story was that when you have a board that's as powerful as this board that has final authority over rulemaking, over most of North Carolina state law, I think that it's really important what those 10 people bring to the table with regard to their personal, political, and professional interests, expertise, and connections. And I think that it's clear that the people who are sitting on this board have knowledge of and interest in business and development.
We are talking about North Carolina's Rules Review Commission. With us are Jennifer Strom, writer for the Independent Weekly Newspaper, who's written about the RRC, and Joe DeLuca, who is staff attorney for the Rules Review Commission. And we welcome your calls. The number's 1-877-962-9862. Just how should our state balance the power between lawmaking and regulating branches of government? Just ahead, we'll get to your calls and talk with some of the parties engaged in this debate over the RRC. Support for the State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. Today we're talking about a board you may not have heard about before. It's a 10-member state panel known as the Rules Review Commission. The RRC looks at regulations that have been proposed by other commissions in the state before they are adopted onto the books. Most of the rules that come before it, the RRC does approve, but some rules they reject. And we are talking about some of those today. Some have argued that the Rules Review Commission has overstepped its bounds. Others argue the group is unconstitutional. Its supporters say that it has kept the state from being overburdened by regulation. We are joined by Joe DeLuca, who is staff attorney for the RRC, and Jennifer Strom, who is a writer for the Independent Weekly Newspaper, who recently wrote an article critical of the RRC. We welcome your calls. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. And we go to Raleigh. Dan is there. Hi, Dan.
Yes, I'm wondering as to why a non-elected 10-member committee should have a veto power over the elected executive branch. And also, secondly, why shouldn't the RRC be actually part and parcel during the rulemaking process, helping advise that the rules are being followed rather than making a judgment after the fact?
Okay, we'll put that call to our guests. Joe DeLuca, first of all, why does the RRC have, in effect, what Dan is calling here, veto power? That was a change about a decade ago.
That was changed about a decade ago. In the 1995 session, applied rules pretty much that started rulemaking in 1996. So we've had that for about 10 years. I certainly can't say what was on the mind of every legislator who voted for it. But I think part of it was that in the period before that, the RRC had served as primarily an advisory body, if you would. And it could make objections to rules. And if the agencies put those rules into effect, it would be noted in the history note. And that would be a real red flag. In fact, most agencies, if we objected to a rule, usually tried to satisfy the objection. But I think what happened was the easy decisions had been made, and the really bad rules that lacked authority or were horribly ambiguous and unclear had all been taken care of. And more often, the agencies were putting into effect rules that quite frankly, they did not have the authority to do. And I think the legislature was looking, and again, I'm speculating. I can't speak for why they did that. But I think they were looking to try to get a little bit more of a review in the rulemaking process. And I think we are part of the rulemaking process. We're at the end of the process, that this is the way rules are made. It goes through all these steps by, and many of the agencies making the rules are similarly non-elected agencies. These are commissions that are appointed by the legislature and by the governor. Often they're combined appointments, but in the same way that the Rules Review Commission is non-elected, if you would, the rulemaking agencies themselves, for the most part, are the same makeup.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer Strom?
I'm going to disagree with Mr. DeLuca about why the change was made. It's clear from the record in the legislature and news accounts at the time and comments from both Speaker Black and Senate President Mark Basnight that the Rules Review Commission's power was increased in order to satisfy complaints from business and industry that there were too many rules that were cutting into their profits. It was absolutely clear. I mean, the North Carolina Homebuilders Association Executive Director Mike Carpenter had a hand in writing this legislation specifically because the home builders industry, the North Carolina Association of Realtors, the North Carolina Citizens for Business and Industry, the chemical and manufacturers, different special interests who lose money over regulatory compliance were itching to have less rules on their business.
I wonder if this gets back to our civics lessons when we were students in elementary and secondary school of the separation of powers here. Because the way North Carolina has it set up, we have the legislature that makes that decides on bills becoming law, the governor signs them into law, and then if there are the devil in the details of the regulations, that is something that is in the executive branch. And that's why a lot of these commissions would be, the governor appoints a lot of the members of, say, the Environmental Management Commission. But as I understand it, the RRC is entirely appointed by the legislative branch. So are we seeing a check and balance, and now it's going back to the legislative side? And
Melinda, that's why the courts are looking at the questions that they're looking at, because the environmental groups that filed suit over the stormwater rules, and as well as the North Carolina Board of Pharmacy, which filed a similar suit challenging the constitutionality of the board's makeup back in 99, which is currently in front of the Court of Appeals. There are two cases pending at the moment challenging the constitutionality of the Rules Review Commission for that very reason.
Okay. We are talking today about North Carolina's Rules Review Commission. It's a panel of 10 members appointed by the legislature. It reviews thousands of rules in a year, and most of the rules that come before the RRC, it passes. But one of the more controversial rejections of the commission, the RRC, came in the past year and a half, 2 years. The RRC rejected rules that the Environmental Management Commission had come up with regarding stormwater runoff in North Carolina. That decision upset environmental groups as well as the EMC, led to a couple of lawsuits against the commission, and a Wake judge ruled last month that the RRC had overstepped its bounds, said it was arbitrary and capricious in rejecting the EMC's stormwater rules. Joining us right now on the line is Dan Bessie. He is a member of the Environmental Management Commission, which was one of the parties in the suit against the RRC. Thanks for being with us, Dan Bessie.
You're certainly welcome.
Well, what was the main grounds of your lawsuit, of the EMC's suit against the RRC?
Well, the EMC's suit against the Rules Review Commission was specifically on the grounds that commission had overstepped its statutory authority, that it had acted outside the boundary of its statutory role in supposedly making sure that other commissions stay within their own statutory authority and write clear and ambiguous rules and follow proper procedure. And the Environmental Management Commission felt very strongly as a body, after we reviewed the give and take that had gone back and forth between us and the Rules Review Commission, that their objections were not well-based and were, in fact, arbitrary, and had gone beyond their own authority and what they tried to do. And the reviewing court agreed with us.
Now, is the EMC taking issue with the Rules Review Commission existing at all? If the EMC had its way, or if you care to speak as one member of the EMC, how would this be arranged with the way the RRC oversees rules?
That's an excellent question, and here I have to differentiate between the formal position that the Environmental Management Commission took on this question and what many of us who are members of the commission believe. We were advised that it would be a cleaner case from our perspective as one agency of the state, in effect suing another agency of the state, if we took the issue up just on statutory authority question. And so that's what we did. A number of us on the commission, as individuals, believe that the Rules Review Commission itself, as it's currently structured and empowered by the legislature, is unconstitutional. I'm one of those members who believes that, and I am very hopeful that the courts will eventually reach the question of whether the legislature has exceeded its constitutional authority in setting up the Rules Review Commission as it has.
And you've been around the EMC for a number of years. Do you have a sense of if that could ever happen, and if so, within how many years' time?
Well, it's tough to get a case like this through the court system because, as happened in this instance, the courts like to resolve issues on other grounds. In this case, the court found that the Rules Review Commission had clearly exceeded its own statutory authority and had been arbitrary in the way it dealt with these rules, and so it didn't have to reach the constitutionality of the commission itself. And so I really don't know when that larger constitutional question is going to come to a definitive decision by a court of record, the Court of Appeals, or the Supreme Court.
Do you see any other practical way that some of these issues might be resolved, such as requirements on the makeup of the RRC? Could that get to some of this, or you object entirely to the RRC having the amount of power it does right now?
Unfortunately, the basic problem with the RRC is the kind of authority it has. It has absolute veto authority. And I am not one that focuses my criticism on the individual makeup of the Rules Review Commission. That's another question. Personally, I think that a panel of genius saints could not do the job that board is charged by law with doing. Take a look at the variety of programs that it has to oversee thousands of rules from: environmental management, coastal resources, marine fisheries, sedimentation control, soil and water, mining, public health. No panel of 10 people is going to be able to do a good, competent job of overseeing all of those programs. And let's take a look at what Mr. DeLuca has pointed out about the standards that the Rules Review Commission is supposed to be applying. Is the rule within the statutory authority delegated to the agency, and is it clear and ambiguous? Unfortunately, the reality is that those questions get very much into the detail of the programs themselves. What is the intent of the legislature in its authority that's assigned to environmental management to protect clean water, to protect clean air, to protect public health? What is necessary in order to do those jobs legislature's charge?
Well, I'd like to give Joe DeLuca a chance to answer that. Joe?
Dan, good to talk with you.
Good to see you.
And that's why I think, though, that the Rules Review Commission is not supposed to look at the quality and efficacy of those rules, whether or not it's good public policy, the necessity of those rules as determined by the agency. For the most part, the Rules Review Commission is really supposed to avoid those sorts of issues.
And unfortunately, it hasn't been doing so. I
think for the most part we have. I think I can go that far. And part of it is I need to be careful because those are ongoing cases where my commission is a defendant in. So I think I need to exercise a little bit of judgment there. But I feel pretty comfortable in saying that really, for the most part, over and over and over again, with the thousands of rules that have gone through the commission, and many very controversial rules, many almost every month there's one that attracts a great deal of attention, that it does restrict its review to whether or not there's the authority, and whether they're clear and whether they followed the process. I think even in the stormwater rules, the EMC, I think, even kind of conceded that the first set of rules that came through that told county governments what to do and that they had to make laws over this stuff, I think the EMC even pretty much conceded, and I could be wrong about your reasons for changing it, but that they didn't have the authority to order county governments around.
Well, actually, we didn't concede the merits. What we did was concede that you had the power to veto our rules and that it's a practical matter we ought to negotiate if we could.
Well,
we tried to do that, made adjustments in response to the Rules Review Commission's initial objections. We modified the rules so that county governments did not have to adopt local ordinances, that it was within their option, dealt with the problem in another way, and your commission, by a majority vote, still said, well, it's not good enough, and we're going to return the rule. I think what's happened in reality is that the degree of authority given to the Rules Review Commission makes it the 800-pound gorilla in administrative rulemaking, and all of the other agencies know that we have to try to satisfy the Rules Review Commission, and we do. And in most cases, the objections are negotiated out. Here is an instance in which we were frankly unable to do that. The Rules Review Commission, and I think in this instance, was unduly influenced by the land development industry, decided that it would return the rule to us, effectively veto the rule, even though we had met its earlier objections in our adjustments to the rule. And that, to the Environmental Management Commission, was the final straw. We had to go to court, and I think that's the first time we've taken the Rules Review Commission to court. So it looks to me like we're one for one.
We'll be happy to look at those rules again.
Okay. Dan Bessie, thank you for joining us today.
Yes, and thanks very much. And I know that that Mr. DeLuca has got a really tough job, and I admire the degree of effort that you put into trying to help this commission review the incredible variety of programs that it's charged with doing. I just honestly think that y'all have got a job that no mortal can do.
Well, I thank you for that. I would like to respond to the earlier caller also, and Mr. Bessie just gave me the opening on that, talking about being part of the rulemaking process earlier in things. Informally, the Rules Review Commission, the staff, and trying to reflect what it thinks the commission might do, does participate very early on. If an agency wants to come to us and talk about a set of rules and what might be potential problems with those rules or how to solve a problem within the language of the statute that they have and the work they need to do. We are very happy, and one of the fun things about this job that I have has been participating with the agencies, often at a very early stage in their rulemaking on this.
You're the staff attorney for, one of the staff attorneys?
One of the staff.
For the RRC. What had been your advice to the RRC on stormwater, stormwater rules?
I don't...
What a good question, Melinda.
I don't think it's time to rehash that sort of thing. And frankly, a month after a rule is gone, I have trouble remembering exactly
what it... You can't remember
if
you thought they were good or bad?
I don't think we need to go into that sort. The point is that the commission felt very strongly that the EMC, and this was a very unusual set of rules. It was also caught between an old APA, Administrative Procedure Act rulemaking process, and some timelines and stuff, and a new one. And this was the last set of rules that was caught in there that might require a different process. And there was some disagreement among commissioners and staff and the EMC about what process to follow. Judge Stevens has now taken care of that and satisfied
that. And he shot
it
back to the RRC.
And he has answered that question about which process to follow.
But Jennifer
Melinda,
Strom.
To answer your original question, the staff's recommendation in January of 2004 was that the Rules Review Commission approve the stormwater rules.
the staff for the RRC?
Yes.
Okay. 1-877-962-9862 is our number. We are talking with Joe DeLuca, staff attorney for the Rules Review Commission, Jennifer Strom, writer for The Independent Weekly, who has written about the RRC. I think we have time to squeeze in a call before our break. Let's go to Joe in Raleigh. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Melinda.
Hi.
Melinda, I'd like to call everybody's attention to the fact that we live in a state that in the not-too-distant past had an executive branch of government that did not even have the power to veto a bill of the legislature. And I would suggest that the Rules Commission is an arcane way of the legislature continuing to influence its undue authority over the system of checks and balances, and it's unfair to the citizens of the state. Someone mentioned the North Carolina Board of Pharmacy having to sue the Rules Commission. If I'm not mistaken, the suit originally developed because the Board of Pharmacy tried to adopt a rule that allowed a pharmacist who worked a 12-hour shift to have a half-hour lunch break. And they were overruled by the Rules Commission.
What were the grounds of that, Joe DeLuca?
Because the Board of Pharmacy was ordering pharmacies to do something. In the opinion of the Rules Review Commission and in the opinion of the Superior Court of North Carolina, Judge Hill, the Board of Pharmacy has very limited authority over pharmacies setting working conditions. If the Board of Pharmacy had truly desired to keep pharmacists from working those long hours, they could have ordered pharmacists not to fill prescriptions after working for a certain length of time. And that would have been within their authority.
Well, wouldn't that be the same thing as saying you can't work more than 12 hours?
No, because they can work more than 12 hours under that rule if they choose to.
Okay. We'll continue our conversation. Joe DeLuca is with us. He is attorney for North Carolina's Rules Review Commission, and Jennifer Strom is a writer for the Independent Weekly newspaper. And coming up, we'll be talking with a member of the RRC. Also, more of your calls at 1-877-962-9862. All of that ahead on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava. Today we're talking about the rules and regulations and how they are set here in North Carolina. There is a 10-member panel known as the Rules Review Commission, and this is the end of the line for rules and regulations. After other commissions may come up with proposed regulations, it goes to the Rules Review Commission. That group rejects or approves all of the rules in North Carolina before they're written into the books. They approve most of the regulations that come before them, but some of the rejections have been controversial and at the center of some court cases. The constitutionality, indeed, of the Rules Review Commission is being challenged. We're talking with Joe DeLuca. He is staff attorney of the Rules Review Commission, and Jennifer Strom, writer for the Independent Weekly newspaper, who wrote recently about the RRC. And we welcome your calls. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. One of the rules that the RRC rejected about a year and a half ago were stormwater runoff regulations proposed by the Environmental Management Commission. And a judge in Raleigh ruled last month that the RRC had been arbitrary in its rejection of those rules and has now told the RRC it has to consider them again. Joining us as well right now, we have Jeff Gray. He is an attorney in Raleigh, and he is one of the 10 members of the Rules Review Commission. He voted against the stormwater regulations. Welcome to The State of Things, Jeff Gray.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Melinda.
Hi. Well, from your perspective, what was the problem with the stormwater regulations that the Environmental Management Commission had put before you?
The whole problem here, and what seems to be lost on most people who have viewed this matter from the outside, as well as the article in The Independent, is the fact that these particular rules had been published and then dramatically changed during the process, which, as Mr. DeLuca referred to earlier, was allowed at one time under the APA. And it had been changed, and the statutory change had not gone into effect, and it's something that Judge Stevens certainly considered and pointed out in his order. But in this instance, they'd been dramatically changed. And the powers are very limited of the commission, but two things that it can look at is the procedural posture, whether the agency actually followed the procedure, and, of course, whether it was within their statutory authority.
But as I understand, in having read a number of news accounts, not just the Independents, but a number of the daily newspapers in the state about this case, is that the Environmental Management Commission had put the rules before the RRC, not just once, but several times, kept going back and saying, okay, we've made these changes you want. So if they made those changes, you're saying because they made the changes, that's why you had to reject them?
Well, because it was so radically changed. We were receiving comments from groups that did not think they were affected before. And when we looked at the posture of it and the notice aspect of it, the procedural posture of the rules as they were before the commission, it was the feeling of those commissioners who voted in favor of the motion that these rules were in such a position that they were not substantially similar to the rules that had been published. And the interesting thing about this is that everybody seems to object to what the Rules Review Commission did, but what it did was in the interest of open government and persons having knowledge of rules that are going to be enacted that may affect them.
In particular, who came forward and said that they would then be adversely affected by the new changes the EMC was making?
Forestry Association filed objections. Numerous entities representing local government had filed objections. And, of course, the most notorious ones in all the stories is the fact that the home builders and the realtors and others. But there were other groups involved. There were other groups interested in these rules beyond the so-called development community, including local governments. And local governments are still concerned about the effect of these rules. There are other groups that have no idea the ramifications, including homeowners associations for subdivisions that are going to have to maintain stormwater basins in perpetuity. And these stormwater basins, if you've driven through a modern subdivision, generally is a large open pond that may or may not have water in it, or much water, that becomes hazards to animals, to children. They breed mosquitoes. They have to be dredged out, and the contents of them are oftentimes, you know, polluted with runoff from the streets. And so there are many groups that don't even know that they're going to be affected by these rules.
I wonder, if some of the criticism of the RRC is that the Environmental Management Commission is made up of members from, a diverse section of North Carolina society. You might have environmentalists there, you might have industry people there. And that a lot of this would have been hashed through at the EMC level with all those representatives of those various walks of life at the table, and that the RRC is coming in after the fact then and reopening everything to negotiation.
I tend to disagree with that view. I think Dan Bessie touched on this in his comments but didn't, follow through. The EMC does need that expertise. It does need many people at the table to make the decisions, and I think they had been hashed through. We did not look at the merits of the rules. We did not look whether they were a good idea or not, whether they were well thought through. We looked at them strictly under the very limited power that we have. And although groups out there, especially those groups that oppose the Rules Review Commission and its existence, feel like it is immensely powerful and has all these broad powers, our powers are actually very limited. Very, very limited in light of the work that we do. And I don't know of any instance where we have gotten into the substance of a rule. And as Mr. DeLuca alluded to earlier, as to whether or not it's a good idea, well thought out, etc., unless it is within that very limited authority that we have. And we did not do it with the stormwater rules. We just had people, groups, associations, etc., coming to us and saying, hey, we weren't affected before. We're affected now. Procedurally, we did not know this was happening. Procedurally, we did not know these rules had been changed to this extent. Procedurally, this is going to affect us. We haven't been at the table. And, that is one thing that the commission can look at and did look at.
Well, The article that was in The Independent that our guest Jennifer Strom wrote was taking issue with, from her perspective, that the RRC is slanted in favor of those who have who work with development interests. You yourself are, I'm quoting here, you described as an attorney who often represents home builders and developers. Well, first of all, is that an accurate description?
Not at all. And my first time I met with, or I ever met Jennifer Strom was when she was doing a case about a home owner against a developer. I represent all sides and have for years. Most of what my firm does has to do with zoning. She cited the instance of two developers that I represent, which happens to be two LLCs owned by the same individual who is out of state, is a Canadian attorney that has interests here, and I've represented him for a long time. He's actually a very, very close friend. And, you know, in the article with not only myself but the other members of the commission, it is my view that Ms. Strom took tenuous, at best, connections with the business or development community and tried to make a case that we are in the pockets of business.
What would you think, though, about the idea that perhaps the RRC, it could certainly have people who came from, who had real estate interests as their line of work or were attorneys who worked on behalf of development people, but also spread it around more? So there would be people who came from other walks of life, other perspectives, maybe had a pro-environmentalist stance, for instance.
Well, you know, and that is certainly a possibility, but I don't think that if you look at the breadth of what we review in a given year, and Dan Bessie touched upon that, and he recognizes that we look at many, many, many things beyond just environmental regulations, and many, many of those affect business, and they affect citizens in everyday life. I mean, we look at rules for adult daycare, child daycare, your qualifications to be a cosmetologist, the price that the Forestry Commission must charge for pine tree seedlings. We have to look at the regulations for exterminators who do home exterminations. We have to look at the qualifications to be a surveyor. There's thousands of things that come through that affect every citizen every day and business people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's any way that you could ever get a Rules Review Commission that represented all those interests. The environmental groups are the most vocal about the fact that there's no one at the table they consider an environmentalist, but I don't think there's a perfect commission member, nor is there a need.
Well, it is the case that the Environmental Management Commission does take members, 13, 19 members from all walks of life. It has certain categories that people should fit, but it's down there. But Jeff Gray, thank you for being with us today.
Certainly.
Jeff Gray is an attorney and a member of the Rules Review Commission. We are discussing this body, which takes a look at the proposed rules that come to it from various commissions and agencies in the state and says A or nay to them. With us are Joe DeLuca, staff attorney for the RRC, and Jennifer Strom, writer for the Independent Weekly, which wrote about it recently. Larry is with us from Raleigh. Hi there, Larry.
Hello. I would like to put in a plug for research, public hearings, and all the preliminaries that go into recommendations made by not only environmental groups, but even the legislature. A few years ago, there was a swimming pool issued down on the coast about pools being built in the front of motels and big homes, and it was well known by lots of experts that this was a bad policy. So there were, you know, several years worth of study and research and public hearings, and the homeowners didn't seem to appear at any of them, the public hearings, but they got to the Rules Review Commission and at the last days of trying to implement the bill. So that's what happened. Does anybody else remember that case?
Well, I'm going to put that one to Joe DeLuca. Joe, is it? I guess what Larry's describing is an end run around the process.
No, I'm not sure. And he talks about a bill. I mean, bills typically go through the legislature, and the Rules Review Commission has very little input or say on things over at the legislature. So I'm not familiar with precisely what Larry is talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should be clear here. We're not talking about the way bills are made into law, but about this, the devil in the details of the setting the standards, the numbers, and quantifying what the regulations are. And there are a number of commissions in the state who meet and talk about what they think the regulations should be, but then it goes to this group, the RRC, which in the past decade has gotten a veto power, and that is at the center of one of the legal challenges against the RRC right now. Janet's in Chapel Hill. Hi, Janet.
Yes.
Hi. Did you have a question or comment for our guests?
I had more of a comment. I wanted to thank Jennifer Strom and The Independent for what I found to be an extraordinarily well-researched and written cover story. And as a voter, I find the entire situation very problematic insofar as I empower my elected representatives to make the final choices in which I can choose to elect them again or not. But I find that the veto power that the RRC has to be extremely problematic, confounded by the fact that they don't have necessarily the expertise required in order to make the kinds of decisions that Mr. DeLuca is suggesting they need in order to make effective recommendations, and in this particular case, have the power to veto.
Joe DeLuca, then Jennifer.
Well, again, and I'm not sure I understand it precisely what you're saying about the problem, because we're not supposed to be looking. The language in the statute that governs the Rules Review Commission tells us precisely we're not supposed to look at the quality or the efficacy of a rule. That means we're not supposed to decide if it's good or bad, or good policy or bad policy, or a well-done rule, or whether a rule could be better. We're supposed to look at whether the agency that has made that rule, that same non-elected agency in most cases, although in some they are the people, the division and directors and the,
from the executive
secretaries
branch.
From the executive branch. We're supposed to look at, do they have the authority for this set of rules?
Jennifer Strom?
I just thank you for your comment. I think that the statute's very clear, and you've heard Mr. DeLuca say and also Mr. Gray say that they're not evaluating whether this is a good rule or a bad rule, but the reality of the way this situation, the way that the Rules Review Commission's power is set up, it's absolutely impossible to divorce what the Rules Review Commission does from the politics that set it up. And if you look at the legislature, over the last 10 years, there are particular special interests whose power and influence and money have been growing steadily. And they have, if you look at what Democracy South labeled the sprawl lobby a few years ago, which includes home builders and road builders and commercial and retail development, they give money to 3 out of 4 legislators, and they give a lot of money, and they're often in the top 1, 2, or 3rd, 2nd, or 3rd slot of campaign donations. They have very powerful, well-paid lobbyists. And campaign donations and lobbying rules, particularly this year with the lobbying reform effort, have received a lot of attention. What's been not been put under public scrutiny is how these special interests control the rulemaking process. And they do it through legislative power. And in the legislature, special interests with the most power have the most say.
Well, obviously, that's not true in all the situations, or else no rules would be coming to Rules Review that were opposed by these all-powerful special interests. I mean, I agree with Jennifer.
After the stormwater rules were rejected, the Home Builders Association was very, very pleased and publicly went public with how they had their agenda accomplished.
And the story will continue because it's in the courts now about the constitutionality of the RRC, and I'm sure we're going to be following this one. I'd like to thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
Jennifer Strom is a writer for the Independent Weekly Newspaper. Joe DeLuca is staff attorney of the Rules Review Commission. Earlier, we spoke with Dan Bessie, who is a member of the Environmental Management Commission, and Jeff Gray, who is a member of the Rules Review Commission. And for today, that's the state of things. If you have a comment about the program, our email address is sot@wunc.org. Support for the State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. Thanks for listening. I'm Melinda Pencava.